I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 189 of the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. I'm Adam and I can't think of anything to say in regards to quotes from the show, and here's Robert.
Well, that's not me at all, huh? No wonder you didn't recognise me. Huh. Oh, that face. That hair. Huh. Oh, I don't know. I think it's rather distinctive, actually. Do you think?
Here's Matthew.
We deal with the odd, the unexplained, anything on Earth or even beyond.
Here's Mary.
On this planet, there is a saying, it is never too late.
Here's Kirby.
You fancy buying a rabbit or two?
I was going to use that one.
Welcome to the show. This week we're
going
to be...
Well, you didn't.
I know, luckily.
Going to be talking about... We're trying to talk about Spearhead from Space, amongst other things. We'll talk about the other things later, because I suppose that will fall into the extended news from last week sort of category.
Interesting news.
Spearhead from Space, I've realised I've got it in three different versions. I've got the original DVD release. I've got the second version DVD release, which has a Easter egg of a weird version of the title sequence on. And I have the Blu-ray, which has some fantastic documentary life stories of John Pertwee and Caroline John, and that is worth buying the disc just for itself, because those little what would you call them, biographies, I suppose, are worth the disc value in themselves. They're absolutely superb. I haven't seen all the extras on
it
yet.
I second that.
But those two, for starters, are really good. I did actually watch the. They've got some black and white footage of them trying to create a title sequence. For John Pertwee. Actually, it's very good. If you can't get off to sleep, and I don't mean it's boring, I'm just saying it because it's got a slight hypnotic sort of quality to it. If you watch that for a bit, you'll soon be nodding off. But yeah, very, very much worth its money.
It's about 10 minutes, isn't it, Adam? Something like
that. I don't
know.
I fell asleep before it got to an end.
It's not worth my having to go out and buy a Blu-ray player, though.
Probably not, no. But
get a PS3, PlayStation 3. That will play Blu-ray.
Slightly more expensive. Slightly more expensive than a Blu-ray player. But
Blu-ray players are cheaper now. But I still
I've seen for $69.
What, for a Blu-ray?
Yep. Blu-ray with D.
We don't. The only Blu-rays I would be buying would be. Doctor Who. We consume most of our most everything else by Netflix streaming and YouTube and stuff like that. There's no real reason.
We're moving away from the 20 megabyte Blu-ray marketing podcast back to Doctor Who. So we start with a sort of a shot of Earth from space, which was very similar to Rose, the beginning of Rose. I think that's probably where they got the idea from, to be honest with you.
That this one was taken on the NASA's Apollo 8 mission in 1968, rather than being a CGI creation of the mill.
Yeah,
thank you.
It looked very good.
Someone must have had a chance to read the info text or something. I never got a chance.
Probably
there were other things happening this past week.
Anyway.
Yes, they meant that, Kirby.
Now, obviously, having to watch it now on DVD, having seen it on Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray is just amazing, the quality
is,
of the picture and everything. It's lovely.
Adam?
Yes?
Can I ask, did you watch the coming soon trailer for Green Death?
No, I didn't, no.
Because that will illustrate what I mean when not just the film sequences, but even the video look better on DVD than the, on Blu-ray than the DVD copy.
Yeah. Well, the upscaling.
It's upscaling. One thing that surprised me.
Kirby.
Yeah.
When I'm upscaling.
Robert.
No, because I will answer that, because I use upscale on my DVDs, and it still doesn't look as good as the one that's on the Blu-ray.
Okay. Well,
so what I'm trying to say is that they even look better on the Blu-ray.
Speaking of Spearhead, pulled out. I have a stack of DVDs in one place, and I had a whole bunch in a box from my move. And last week I had pulled out Spearhead from Space, and started watching. I'm going, the quality of this thing is horrible. I had not remembered that I had the special edition, and the difference between the two is incredible. The original one is just so grainy.
Yeah, I was disappointed with the transfer, honestly.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was the original 2001 DVD release was the original restoration work that was done prepared for the BBC Two Doctor Who night, I think in 1999 or 2000. And that was the reason why it was chosen to be one of the first DVD releases was because they had done the restoration work. Moving back to the story for a second, this whole opening sequence with them at the radar station and these meteorites falling down. We talked about a couple of weeks ago briefly with the demons being very much influenced by Quatermass in the Pit. This story, and particularly the way it opens in this whole sequence, is very much influenced by Nigel Neill's Quatermass 2 from 1955. And in fact, if you look on the DVD of the DVD of the Silurians, they actually take this sequence and the sequence from this story and actually compare them side by side, and some of the shots are almost identical. So it's Quatermass is playing a very big influence on it. We've always talked about it. It's a very big influence on the Pertwee era. And here it's an intentional one.
And Quatermass was an influence on a particular goon show as well, the Scarlet Capsule.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Anyway, I'd love to listen to that. Back to the episode, of which we've actually been talking about for 6 minutes and only 1 minute 46 into the actual episode, which is starting to concern me just a tad.
It's exciting.
Basically, the red arrows are flying over, but they're supposed to be the meteorites.
I noticed
And some poacher is out there with his sort of poacher costume. Because I'm sure all poachers wear this particular costume. He's out poaching, and they sort of land nearby and bury themselves. No craters or anything, because you could imagine even an object of that size would create quite a substantial crater when it actually hits Earth. But am I being a bit pedantic? I don't know.
That's our job. How hard they hit the ground.
Okay, thanks. So they probably slowed down a bit before they hit Earth. Anyway, the doctor falls out of the TARDIS, which sort of materializes in the woods face first. It's a shame he doesn't do it a bit slower so we can examine his costume and see how much like it Doctor's.
And the TARDIS looks extremely flimsy.
It does. But it's quite funny, just a flash forward to Enemy of the World, when they first come out of the TARDIS, you can see the back of it, you know, the back wall and the light shining through the actual police public call box signed at the back, which is a bit of a shame. But, of course, if they hadn't returned the episode, we never would have spotted that. Yes?
Yeah. What I love about this is that there's the model shot of the TARDIS materializing, and then it cuts to the actual TARDIS, and the two shots do not match up at
not
all.
Not at all. No, not at all, yeah. Huge difference.
Viewers of TV were not that fussy in the 1970. Bear in mind, it was filmed in 1969. So then we meet Liz Shaw being delivered to Unit HQ, this version of Unit HQ, because obviously there's so many different versions of Unit HQ in the history of Doctor Who. Lots of sweating going on, I notice, actually, with the various characters.
Yes, yeah. I noticed too. Everybody is
don't quite understand
sweat.
To get employed by Unit in those days, the slightest bit of pressure that made you sweat, you had to be employed by Unit.
Studio lights are hot.
Because, poacher bloke out in the woods, he started sweating when he found
that's obvious why he would be sweating, because it's a close encounter of the third kind type thing. He's scared, isn't he?
Yeah, but he doesn't know that,
so
does he?
That's quite natural. That'd be quite natural.
Well, they were filming this all on location at the end of a particularly hot summer, from what I understand, which would explain that as well. But in a lot of there are some of the characters where they look like that because they're autons, but we haven't reached that point yet. But when we get to the factory.
Right. So that's the point I'm trying to map. Not talk about it's the autons, talking about this episode. I've noticed quite a lot of perspiring going on. So basically, the Brigadier hires Liz, who's deliberately skeptical about Unit's role in society.
And the one thing that bothered me about that particular scene was how echoey it was.
Yeah, well, the strange sound quality. Mm-hmm. But only in that room, funny enough, because every scene that was in the Brigadier's office, that they didn't actually have a good boom mic operator, because it sounded like, you know, in the old days when you'd have a video camera and you film it in your own house, so if it was an echoey room, you could hear people speaking, but it wouldn't be as clear as you would expect on a drama.
I'm guessing that was in Wood Norton Hall. No, it was in... what's that?
While Kirby's trying to figure that out, can I just point out, something out in this scene that I found rather amusing, that actually Nicholas Courtney also points out in the commentary. If you look behind the Brigadier's left shoulder in shots in this scene, there's a file with a very prominent X on it behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the make of that particular box file. Well, I think we sell them down at the car, actually. But they've obviously updated. They've updated the logo a little bit. Now, back at the hospital, where the doctor's obviously being looked after by a medical doctor rather than I noticed the janitor, or cleaner, as we call him in this country, or porter even, might even be a hospital porter. You were talking about Green Death, and he's in it.
I know, yeah. Corcoran Thomas, Welsh actor.
Yes. And doesn't disguise his Welshness either, does he? Now, he goes into this little phone booth. Now, this phone booth that he goes into reminds me of when I was little. That we had the Cowes Co-op, is now the has the post office. But before the post office moved to the co-op, we had a building which was the post office, and when you went into that post office, the whole left hand side of that post office was a line.
What?
Your name isn't Joss. That's my wife.
Sorry, am I that boring? You're gonna have to call for someone to help you out. Anyway, yeah, they had a line of these little booths with telephones in it, and so you just had exactly the same sorts of doors and everything. But they didn't last long. They were gone by probably about 1973, 74. But I clearly remember them from my childhood. And every time I've seen that scene, it always gives me a little flashback. And that wasted a couple of minutes, didn't it?
And meanwhile, you don't see phone booths anywhere.
Right.
No, you see telephone boxes. We've got a few. There's one just around the corner from where I am, opposite the fire station.
I couldn't tell you where there's one nowadays. Everyone's got a cell phone.
Yeah, they're about. What if you? Yeah, but yeah, that's true. I suppose you can always knock on someone's door.
The hobos,
borrow your phone, but
the tramps.
What?
The hobos, the tramps. Do they have mobile phones too?
Yeah, I think so. I think they do. I don't know how they charge their phones up, but you suppose you can get solar charges.
Yeah, and in the States, they give them away for free now. So everybody has one.
Where?
Do they now? I love one. Yeah. Anyway, the doctor sort of wakes up and he's looking for his shoes. And that's his first words, isn't it?
Yes,
shoes.
Yes.
Shoes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Shoes. Everybody loves shoes.
What's the name?
Certification.
You've been certified. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
When my wife had time off work for my dad's funeral, she had compassionate leave. So they want to see the letter from the funeral place. And I put it on a thumb drive, and she needs to go next door to, because our printer's not working, so she needs to get it printed.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, the press turn up at the hospital. So phoned up the papers.
Prentice Hancock?
Indeed. It was a little bit of a cameo, wasn't it? But, you know, he looks so young when he's in Planet of Evil, doesn't he? You'd think that when this was shot 7 years earlier, or 6 years earlier, whatever, that he'd be a baby.
It would have been 5 years earlier.
No, he obviously retained his youthful looks quite
well.
Which
one is Prentice Hancock?
For a period of time.
The reporter.
He's one, the blonde reporter.
Light blue top, I think. Certification.
Yes, he has been certified.
We knew that all along.
So the Brigadier turns up at the hospital after being sort of tipped off that somebody with a blue box or a police box has sort of been admitted. And, of course, when he sees the doctor, he thinks, oh, that's not him. But the doctor sees him and thinks, Lethbridge Stewart, my old... And you notice also that in the subtitles, when the Brigadier speaks, they always put Stewart when he's off camera.
Well, also, the General refers to him as Stewart.
I know, but that's not a reason for not calling him Lethbridge Jerks. That's his name. The general's just being pompous. Yeah. So, yeah, it does a lot of napping in this first episode, the Doctor, actually. they put a guard on the TARDIS.
By the way, those unit uniforms are the same ones that were used in the invasion.
Yeah. It would be used throughout the...
I thought they might be.
No. They were changed by the next unit story.
No, they were still used in Silurians and Ambassadors and Inferno, and they were starting to transition out of them in Inferno. And then,
for the benefit of Reese, the theme tune playing in the background is from Star Trek, Cadent Wars.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, carry on, Matthew. Far be it from me to stop you in your pedantness. Carry on.
But they were starting to transition out of them by the time they reached Inferno, to the point that only the Brigadier was wearing that uniform. So everybody else was in these sort of camouflage outfits. And then, because they had more money at the start of the season, the Brigadier got a proper uniform. So they were used throughout, from basically through the invasion through Inferno, and then they disappeared and were never seen again.
Actually, Matthew, come to think of that, you know how Douglas Camfield was on Inferno, so maybe they asked him then, being a military man. I think it was he that they asked, you know, what would the army, what would unit wear? And they said, well, just like regular army. That's what they were told. So I think that would be
for the invasion. Privates and corporals wore number 7 dress. White ranks of sergeant and above wore uniforms based on number 4 dress, but lacked buttons. But anyway, they changed them by ambassadors. It's under units on Wikipedia.
They look like.
Are we done
they
now?
Look like
can
ones
we, can
anyway.
We move away from?
Okay, I'm sorry. Is my snoring interfering with anything?
Yeah, thank you, Mary. Basically, we spent 5 minutes talking about a uniform that was used in Invasion, and it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, but thanks. It was quite interesting just to say that a uniform was just used in Invasion. That's great. But to go on about the bloody fabric they used, and there's certain times other things, it's just... moving on.
Talking about it.
Be quiet. Right, so I got to the bit where the unit soldiers found the poacher bloke with a sack over his back, apparently with rabbits in it. Because they're guarding the TARDIS. Guarding the TARDIS.
I said, what did he say to them? He says, ain't nothing so tasty as a fresh rabbit, a bit of salt and a few onions.
Sounds like Sam Gamgee.
Apparently so. I've only ever eaten rabbit once.
Same here.
Tastes like chicken.
Tastes horrible. No taste.
Anyway, he gets his shoes and cuddles them. Aww. Strange.
He's got his keys.
Teddy bears at
he's
time
got his
Lord
keys. That's why.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, it gets kidnapped, doesn't he, basically? This is the next episode, I think. No, it's not.
No. Yeah.
Oh, the end of this episode is him getting shot.
Hold on. I've got some very important bit. At 19 minutes, 13 seconds, you know, when the doctor's talking to the doctor in bed.
The doctor's
talking to the doctor. You know what I mean? I can't remember the doctor's name. But if you look at the pink radiator has a microphone taped to it on the far right hand side of the picture.
It looks like a wire
right,
going.
What's that time code?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. What's the time code? My machine's having trouble.
19 minutes 13 seconds.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't like being going backwards and forwards. 19 minutes and 13
on
seconds.
On the radiator on the far right.
Oh yeah, there is.
Yeah. Oh,
well, I've never spotted that before. Thank you for that,
and
Robert.
The character is Dr. Henderson, played by Anthony Webb.
Yeah, all right, thank you. So anyway, the Doctor, like I say, he gets shot by one of the Unix soldiers.
What'd you do that
but
for?
It's this... yeah, no, but this is the stage in which whenever John Pertwee's Doctor was in a slight bother, his eye would go a bit
boss. I know. Even at the end of the story.
Yeah, but not by the end of his era. He'd got over this strange boss-eyed thing. Because he was still stuck in... I'm a comedian sort of mode a little bit.
Yes,
he's trying very difficult to move into some acting, serious sort of acting.
You think
because he was always associated with silly voices.
Do you think he did that on the radio too, despite there being no audience? Yeah, he might do.
Well, I suppose they do. You have to act it out on the radio.
Radio actors are not constrained by anything, so
Mm.
I suppose they do. You have to imagine you're there, don't you, when you're acting at any stage where it'd be... Don't you, Reese? Anyway, we end up at this plastics factory with a woman with a sort of beehive haircut wearing a flowery green dress. Takes this chap... I know. I just found it quite interesting looking at the backgrounds, all the dolls in their packaging and stuff on the thing. It reminded me a little like the sort of big doll versions of the Spice Girls, actually, the way they... There was five of them all up.
Well, what I was impressed with was how threatening the factory appeared because of the way they were showing you how they were making the dolls' heads.
Stitching
punching and all that stuff. And it made...
Obviously, that
which should be a
that sort of footage was stock footage, wasn't
feel
it?
Feel very threatening.
That wasn't stock footage. That was real.
No, it wasn't stock footage. It was from a doll factory that they were really... That was really there.
They went to film it.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, because usually with things like that, they'd get a bit of stock footage and bung it in. So they actually went to a factory and filmed it.
You can...
I used to, because, sorry.
Well, you can tell that because if you look at when stock footage is used elsewhere, because the stock footage is used over and over and over again, the quality of it degrades. Whereas this is the quality of the footage is as fresh as everything else around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the fun thing is, being this being on Blu-ray, there is a few scenes, I think, don't know whether it was outside or not, but there was a couple of bits of hair hanging down from the top of the picture, which I thought that they would have digitally removed by the time it got to Blu-ray. Hmm. But I would have thought those bits of hair were particularly easy to digitally remove.
Those are in my copy too.
Yeah, I didn't see a Blu-ray copy or an upgraded copy, so I never saw the hairs.
Thank you, Kirby. Anyway, so Liz is in her little lab, and
I thought you were going to say miniskirt.
She's still not believing the Brigadier's tales of aliens and stuff, which is typical. The poacher bloke keeps on opening up his little case where he keeps the thing. I don't know why he keeps opening it up. But every time it opens it up, it sends out a signal to nearby Autons, which do look quite sinister, I have to say. And then we get some...
Energy unit.
Old... The wife comes out and they've caught a funny
relationship
off them too. You can't ever imagine, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but you can never imagine them ever having sex. And to be legally married, they must have consummated the relationship somewhere along the line.
Well, it's your cliched English country couple, that older English country couple that doesn't get along.
Mm-hmm. Did you see how small their cottages are?
But apparently love each other.
Their cottage is so low.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Well, but they filmed it in that cottage,
didn't
they?
And they've expanded the cottage now, and so that little outbuilding is no longer...
How do you know that?
I have my sources.
Look, Kirby, no wonder you can't afford to buy blimmin' Blu-rays and download stuff or thing if you're travelling to Great Britain to have a look around people's houses.
It's called Wheelbarrow Castle Cottage.
Google
Earth. It's in Radford.
Oh, is it? All right.
Where?
Okay, thank you for that. Right, the doctor disappears into a little room to have a shower. And I love the shower. So
I did like that shower.
That shower's still there, and they show it on occasional tours.
Jesus.
And we get a nice little view of Pertwee's little naked back, yes.
Oh, I thought we'd wonder what you were going to say there.
And his tattoo. Don't forget his
tattoo. And his tattoo.
You have to get the Blu-ray.
Yeah, apparently apparently he was drunk when he got that tattoo. Couldn't even remember getting it done, but he was very proud of it. That was on the documentary about his life story, which, like I say, you can get on the Blu-ray, as you can with the Caroline John one. Both of them, and I'm going to reiterate this, are worth getting the Blu-ray for. So about an hour combined, I suppose, the two of them.
I second that.
And I'll definitely watch them again. So this is where he nicks somebody's clothes, a bit like the 11th Doctor. Yeah. And
the 8th Doctor.
He has a little...
Yes.
But he has a little plaster on his forehead, which I think disappears quite quickly.
Yes.
But I have to look out for that one. Don't remember him having it for the rest of the story.
He's a time
And he finds his way to you.
I just posted a picture.
Yeah, still regenerating.
I just posted a picture of the microphone in the hospital bed Facebook page.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Like I say, the doctor turns up at unit after nicking someone's car, and some soldier is forced off the road, and there's some gory, sort of very sort of anemic blood on the windscreen where it's all smashed up and that.
Yeah.
but obviously this is very early days in colour TV. You had to sort of illustrate blood in a certain type of colour.
Wait, did you skip by the wheelchair?
Hang on, yeah.
While I was hosting that?
No, okay. I was talking about
okay,
the
Okay, I was dealing with the microphone, I guess.
That's where he got shot. Yeah, the Brigadier tries, because they get the TARDIS into the lab now, and the Brigadier tries, I don't know how though, how they would have got it through the door, to be honest with you. But the Brigadier tries to use the Doctor's key, and of course it won't open the lock. And of course this is a very convenient to the plot side of things, to be honest with you, because, loads of people have borrowed the key and been able to get in there when it's convenient to the plot. But for this episode, not.
Well, not only that, but he then has the watch that tells him where the TARDIS is, which we've never seen before.
Right,
and so
there's a certain
indication that there's, you know, more evidence of season 6B going on here.
Okay.
Interesting how a few years later... Sorry.
Shocking more than interesting, I think.
A few years later, we saw a lot of these same locations in Robot.
Oh, yeah, because it's shot in the same location.
Yes.
I didn't quite notice that, but I'll have to look out for that.
Particularly
for that
one, balustrade that they keep walking past.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what
I
missed.
Anyway,
posting that picture. Okay.
Never mind. Yeah, so... Yeah, by the time he gets to Unit HQ, like I say, he has just regenerated, so he's still regenerating. The plaster's gone from his forehead, so he's healed from between the hospital and the lab, or Unit HQ, which, like you say, they've had this in future episodes. The Doctor, when he's sort of so close to having regenerated, will heal quite quickly. So we can accept that, can't we?
Can I mention something that we skipped over?
Yes,
the
you can.
The parking attendant... is none other than Derek Sherwin, a former actor, and was the producer of the era.
I know that. Yeah, I know that.
Yes, I thought I recognized him from somewhere.
And the two shots of the doctor that we see, his mouth is not synchronized with the sound. It's the same shot twice.
Okay, thank you for that. But the fact that Derek Sherwin has appeared for that particular scene, it's probably the one and only time a producer has actually acted in
you
an
know
episode
why?
That he produced. Why?
Because the original actor that they got in, they wanted him to do it, and he just couldn't
he
do it. So
up,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, so he said, give me your uniform and I'll do it, which is why the uniform looks a bit tight on him.
Yeah,
That's good. That's quite an interesting story.
It's that second little short shot between the two longer shots of the Doctor talking, which is just a repeat of the last bit of the first shot of the Doctor. It's not synchronized.
Thank you for that.
I have to look out for
that. Meanwhile, that chap sort of sneaks back into the factory and he sort of walks into the room where there's some sort of deactivated autons, and of course as soon as he gets in there, that one of them starts moving. And
you know what,
the expression of fear on his face goes all wobbly and teeth sort of goes, and he starts, well, a bit later on he starts drooling. Go on then, Robert.
I thought they did that well, because my eyesight was drawn to the middle of the picture, and so I'm just looking at the statue, the mannequin ones, so you don't sort of notice the one when he suddenly comes up. I thought they did it well by having him on the periphery of the picture.
Did you pause then, or did you just completely disappear from sound for a sec? Was there a bit of a pause in between?
No, maybe it's just... Oh. Is that happening to me, is it?
Well, no, it sounded like there was a bit of a gap in what you were saying, but I still understood what you said. It's a bit weird. I thought you might have paused.
That carpet in that room is awful.
And an interesting thing,
you
I don't know if you guys watch like a continuous movie type version, but the one I saw was broken into four episodes. And for the first time, I noticed that, you know, how they repeat a little bit of the previous episode at the start of the next one. Yeah. It struck me that this is the only time I can remember when the repeat of that scene in the opening of the second episode was a completely different angle, a different shot angle.
Oh, that happened all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
Especially during
the first and second Doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I drifted then. So I only know what you're talking about when I listen back to the show.
They had to reenact a lot of the first and second Doctor reprises because of the way they used to do things.
If you recall, a few weeks ago, an actor completely disappeared from one shot between the two segments because he died in the previous episode, and they didn't bring him back for the next episode.
That would have been
Davros.
Yeah.
Well, it always seemed to me that they would repeat it as exactly as possible.
Oh, they tried, but
the angle of the shot and all that was totally different.
They wouldn't necessarily mark where they had the camera or anything.
And there were
even times where they'd dismantle the entire set and move it from one studio to another.
Yeah, from Ealing to not Ealing. What's the Lime Grove to what's it called? Television Center.
Television Center.
Things like that. Yeah.
Anyway, can we get back to the?
We're fond of knowledge, aren't we?
Making television programs was quite a bit different in the.
Oh, early I know. Days. It's amazing that
What's always amazed me is that they would. Not for this one, but they would often, particularly with the early ones, film them in story order instead of trying to film all the scenes in one set together.
I like the way they do it now.
Right. Can I get back to the show, please?
Yeah.
I'm awake now. All right. So where did we get up to? He's got a bit scared by scary Auton. And his face goes a bit wobbly, like I said.
I like the guns, the Auton guns then, than the Auton guns now.
Yes.
No, they're okay. They're a bit sort of blue on the inside, aren't they?
Well, they're more ray gunny things.
Yeah.
With
little
they make a sort of strange noise as well, don't they?
Oh, well, that's
what the character said when he's describing it to Unit.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought the set was quite good of the sort of inner sanctum of the Autons. Mm-hmm. It was quite effective. Yeah. Anyway, like I say, he goes legging it and collapses in the woods and sort of gets taken in by Unit. Meanwhile, the poacher bloke is chopping up some flimsy wood with a pathetic axe. Well, the wood's completely rotten. All he has to do is tear it
apart. Except for the last little bit that he tried, and it didn't work at all.
Yeah, well, not really surprising.
Like your hat, Adam.
He can't afford to keep his belt up, his trousers up with a belt, so he's got a bit of string. And of course, he's cutting up wood. He's lighting a pipe next to a thatched roof.
Why not?
Slightly dangerous, like I say. Then we go back to the chap who's all like scared and sweating
Hibbert.
And drooling.
No, not Hibbert. Ransom.
Yeah, but he's a bit scared and shaky. It was a blooming Auton. It wasn't that scary, was it?
No. If you were in a waxworks museum and somebody came to life, wouldn't that freak you out?
I'd probably be a bit freaked out, but I wouldn't go all shaky and drooly and sweaty. I'd probably be a bit, that was a bit scary, but I wouldn't be like, he was a bit...
He was overacting, I think, is the problem.
Yes.
It was entertaining, though, but he was indeed overacting, yes. The poacher bloke turns up at the Unit sort of tent to sort of hint at the fact he knows where one of these little pod things is.
He wants money.
Meanwhile, Ransom is taken to Unit HQ to have a chat with the Brigadier. And then the Doctor turns up. Or the Doctor gets the key, because Liz nicks the key out of the Brigadier's office, doesn't she? And when he goes into the TARDIS, we hear some sort of strange sound effects, and there's a bit of smoke and stuff, which was quite funny. But I quite enjoyed these little sort of references to the Doctor's, sort of exile.
Yes.
But doesn't mention the Time Lords again, which I thought was quite funny. He just said, called them them, didn't he?
Yeah.
You would have thought that now the Time Lords had been confirmed as his race,
but,
that he might have mentioned them by name. But I suppose, yes.
If you go to the first and second Doctor, which is what I quite like. They're very mysterious. Rather than going around, I'm the Doctor, I'm a Time Lord from the planet Gallifrey,
as a lot
of the later ones would do. And I get sick of that when I'm the Doctor, I'm from the planet Gallifrey. You know, I just think that's a bit too much, whereas it's nice when they're more mysterious, which I thought that was good.
I think I would agree with that. I think it's good that that they didn't. They're sort of keeping up with the fact that he doesn't mention it that much.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been surprised if they had, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because obviously the first story of the next series, Terror of the Autons, we see another Time Lord.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a mention, of course, the Master comes into it then. So, but that's okay. Yeah, it's like you say, the poacher bloke is trying to get some money.
Sam Seeley.
Meanwhile, his missus is able to unlock the box. Yeah. And she gets chased by an Auton and loads a gun and shoots it and doesn't have really much effect on the Auton. I thought initially they'd killed her.
Yeah, so
I know. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
Weird.
Because also the Channing, was it, had a sort of a thing about total destruction
when you go
in. But that's when they disappear.
Quite a good effect, really, for the time.
I love it.
When they got rid of Ransom.
Apart from...
and then they did...
Now, you know that smoke that they used to use? Apparently that was quite toxic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, the brown smoke that they would use, that they used throughout this.
So...
Which I love.
They nearly killed the actor as well.
Yes.
Now, of course, the boss of the factory, played by John Woodnut.
Yes, Chair of the Zygons.
Which
I haven't seen yet.
Suppressing his Scottish accent. I haven't got it. I've got it. Oh, I've got it. I haven't seen the DVD of it, but I heard that 10th Planet's out today. So I must try and get to Sainsbury's today because I want 10th Planet, even though they'll probably re-release it in a few weeks' time in its complete form.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, Dave.
Can't wait.
Yeah, so episode 3 ends with General Scobie visiting General Scobie. And I thought they did that really, really well because obviously it's not him.
I was going to say, you missed the nice scene where, remember the... car crash with the unit soldier.
The car crash with the unit soldier. That was the end of the previous
episode. Yeah.
With the bloody windscreen. Yeah. I told you about that.
Oh.
You weren't listening, were you, Robert?
I must have missed that. I must be dreaming.
Grief. No, you just weren't listening.
I was going to say,
General Scobie.
Did you notice that crash that they used a handheld camera to simulate? The car rolling.
Yeah. Yes. They rolled it over, didn't they? Yeah, let's say General Scobie visits General Scobie.
In the lobby of the hotel, the effect that everyone's staying at.
Yeah, but the effect of them two being standing there in that same scene, that was really well done.
If you have a look at the balding on the real General Scobie, it's not quite the same balding pattern as the double.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, but they did a fantastic job.
That's what I noticed.
I bought it.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Otherwise, Mary. I thought it was quite good.
Thing is, Robert, Mary knows I'm right, so she just doesn't bother arguing. Anyway, so they go, the Doctor and Liz go to Madame Tussauds, I think. Is it supposed to be Madame Tussauds?
Yes.
Yeah, I know, but is it supposed to be, or is it just somewhere where they got some waxworks or plastic works, I suppose.
Oh, it really is Madame Tussauds.
Okay.
Yeah, they did go and film there.
Because it's pretty drab. Because when I went to Madame Tussauds, it was a bit less drab, and it's quite darkly lit, I seem to remember. But actually, the funny thing is, this was filmed in 1969. I went on a school trip in 1972 to Madame Tussauds, and the thing that sticks in my mind is not so much the waxworks, was the CCTV. That was the first time I ever saw myself on a TV screen. Because they had these black and white TV screens. You went in, and that was quite an amazing thing in 1972 to see yourself on a TV screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also coming out of it, looking up and seeing the post office tower. As well, it's obviously things like that are things you only see in books and papers, and when you're actually there seeing it for the first time as a 6-year old. But I don't remember Madame Tussauds inside being as drab as it is in this particular thing.
Maybe they'd renovated.
Or maybe they only had permission to use part of it, because they had to set up that whole section of what were they, the top civil servants. I mean, who would pay to go in and see top civil servants?
There's a line about that in The Last Post, the Companion Chronicle, which is set throughout this whole season, where the last one Caroline John did, where I can't remember if it's her or Liz Shaw's mother makes the comment about, why would you put civil servants and generals in a waxworks?
But I would say that it's quite possible that was only one part of the exhibition, because it's quite a big place, Madame Tussauds. I didn't know that was filmed there, so that's quite interesting.
You're actually interested in the places that the show was filmed?
Oh, no.
I'm shocked.
Only because I've been there. And I was been there about 3 years after this was filmed. And also, there is a Madame Tussauds in Blackpool, which I nearly went in, but we didn't quite have enough money. And also Wookiee Hole. Now, Wookiee Hole, when I went there in late 1970s, 1978,
oh, I thought you
that
said
had
Wookie.
The Madame Tussauds.
Did you find any
That had the Madame Tussauds head storage. So basically, there was a place in Wookiee Hole where they had just the heads of some of the unused models that were no longer at the main Madame Tussauds.
Must be like Futurama.
Because obviously, Madame Tussauds, I think, owned Wookiee Hole in those days. So, like they do actually own some of the main theme parks in Britain as well now. But that was 1978. And again, that wasn't too long after they filmed the Revenge of the Cybermen. I think that was filmed in...
That was 76, wasn't it?
Particular thing. So there you go. Connections. On the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
No.
Do you think Auton is a shortened version of automation?
I don't really care.
I think it's automaton.
I wouldn't know. The Doctor then comes, when it closes later on, the Doctor comes out from behind a curtain and nearly has a chat with Mahatma Gandhi, which is probably one of the only general recognised waxworks that are there.
He didn't come alive, though.
It's quite funny because... Pardon?
Yeah, they had some American presidents there.
Yeah.
Oh, did they? Kennedy and Nixon and Eisenhower.
Kennedy and Nixon. Oh, did they? Okay, well done. But when the boss of the factory, John Woodnut, he's starting to resist the condition. He rubs the back of his neck.
Earlier, when the Doctor and Liz are looking at the waxworks, a lot of those actors are wobbling back and forth. It's very strange.
I know.
I noticed that. Especially. Yeah, but it must be so difficult to stand still, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, the glowing
energy unit
leader of the swarm, whatever it's called,
is
bunged
leader.
In a box, and
swarm leader
in a little box, a blue box. Now the way it was glowing, so that block box, that reminded me of those cubes from Power of Three, obviously slightly bigger, a little bit, maybe, only a little bit though. What did we think of the actual Nestine thing itself? The way
it was
gross. Throbbing,
gross.
And sort of pressing up against the glass. It did look like plastic, as we say, but then it is plastic, so they get away with it, don't they?
Yeah. Look gross.
I think, again,
it looks very good in the box. Is at the end of the episode when it comes out of the box, it doesn't quite look
Are you talking about the tentacles?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, it makes Pertwee's eyes go a bit cross. Boss, I should say. Then we have that iconic scene in the high street. With all the mannequins coming out of the shop windows. Of course, I just use sound effects to illustrate them coming through the glass.
I don't like that glass sound effect,
though. No, I think it was a bit sort of...
Over the top.
What?
Apparently,
it worked rather well.
You think?
And it was
apparently
the same sound
street,
over and over.
It works.
It
works, yeah.
That street looks almost exactly the same.
Yeah, I think they actually...
Thank you for that, Kirby.
I think they actually reused it when they recreated the scene for More Than 30 Years of the TARDIS back in 1993.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a bus in the background with Typhoo on the side. Typhoo tea is on offer at the co-op at the moment. That's quite iconic. It's a very iconic scene that particular thing. But also when some of the people have been shot, some of the innocent bystanders, one of the actors or extras is still wriggling around on the floor when he's supposed to be dead.
One right near the
trying to make himself
getting better.
Trying to make himself comfortable.
I'm not dead yet.
So UNIT, the Doctor, and etc. turn up with a strange gadget, which when they turn it on, makes all the autons go a bit, strange and collapse and die, I suppose, which subsequently leads to the Doctor and Liz infiltrating the inner sanctum, and then the Doctor gets grabbed by the tentacle, like you say, which is rubbish, but what can they do? Liz can't turn on the machine.
The nesting consciousness got a lot bigger a few years later.
In Rose.
Oh, yeah, of course it did. Maybe this is when it was a kid.
Maybe this was just the vanguard of the thing invading, the whole thing was going to show up later.
That's what I would think, yeah.
Because the whole thing in Rose is that the Nestine's feeding planet was destroyed apparently during the Time War, and it's come to Earth full stock.
Okay. Right, hang on. I've got to plug a cable in whilst you lot are rabbiting on. Like I said.
You know the tentacles? Yes.
Not personally, no.
No, but I was going to say, there was a lady on Beauty and the Geek. One of the beauties said, I don't want to go in the water because the octopus is going to wrap its testicles around me. I thought that was very sad. Anyway.
you know that gun battle towards the end of the episode?
The invasion?
Yes, the same alley as in the invasion. And that's really just part of the BBC's facilities at the time. They've been torn down, but there was BBC facility.
It was a Guinness factory, wasn't it?
Yeah, basically Liz saves the day by managing to turn the machine on.
I'll check.
Killing Channing and all the other Autons. And then the Doctor basically arranges his contract with UNIT, which includes a car... and a few other bits and bobs. Yeah. And Liz.
It was TCC condensers.
Thank you for that. Therefore, Spearhead from Space comes to an end. Yes.
Machine that Liz uses, you know when she's fixing it?
Yeah.
If you look when they do a close-up of it, you can see the reflection of the studio lights and the camera in it.
The shiny
globey bit. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for that. Right, this story, written by Robert Holmes, funny enough, not his best work, has to be said, but it's okay. For me, I find this, although I've got it loads of times, I just find it interesting for the wrong reason. I just find it interesting to watch because it's Pertwee's first, it's shot in film. So it's got a different atmosphere to it that way. Certain actors that appear in it. There's quite a lot of sort of cameo appearances by lots of different actors in this particular story. But on the whole, I find it a bit boring. It's not my favourite story at all. I like it for the wrong reasons. I don't like it because it's a particularly good story. I just like it because it's what it is, you know. That's always been my sentiment on Spearhead from Space. I only watch it when I have to, which is a bad thing, isn't it, really? However, the extras on the Blu-ray are fantastic and well worth buying the Blu-ray for. Kirby's up next.
I am? I find this one to be a lot of fun. And I like the fact that it's the very first Auton story, and we come back to them, particularly with Rory. And it's just... I'll watch it for fun. So there.
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, I pretty much for Kirby, I really enjoy it because it's one that I think was shown quite a lot here in Australia. I just think it's very entertaining, apart from that overacting from that guy who plays Ransom when he's spilling all the tea down his mouth.
I like that scene. I thought that was appropriate. And by the way, this I never saw this until I got it on DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shame.
Okay, well, I'm going to say the best to last. So you're next, Matthew.
Oh, thank you, Adam.
wait a minute. You're not the last.
Very fun. No, you're last because you haven't seen it before, Mary. That's why I said save the best to last. Go on then, Matthew.
This would have been one of the first DVDs I bought in 2007. It would have been bought about April or May, probably. I have a I could go look up the page and actually tell you, but I'm not feeling that pedantic today. I really enjoyed this story. As I said, it was one of my first – I think it may well have been my first proper Pertwee story, not including Three Doctors because it's a multi-doctor story. And it's everything – it kind of going back to what I was saying about the demons a couple of weeks ago, you know, this is everything about the Pertwee era. This was the setup. You know, you've got the Third Doctor, you've got UNIT, you've got the Brigadier. Everything's kind of being established. And the foundations for Doctor Who for the next 3 or 4 years and really bringing the show back from the verge of cancellation that it was at the end of the Troughton era because the public was losing interest. But not only that, this story is hugely important as well because it's not only for the fact that it's iconic, but it really serves as the basis for how you introduce a new Doctor. And the fact that all three new series Doctors to date have been introduced through, and you can, elements of this story, the Autons show up in rows, there's the Doctor being incapacitated and stuff in the Christmas invasion. Yeah. And the 11th Hour draws heavily from this. This story is influential. If you want to understand why Doctor Who has lasted as long as it has, this story is a prime example. Yes, it's your typical alien invasion story, and you know it riffs quite heavily on Nigel Neal's Quatermass 2, though it doesn't quite have the same Cold War paranoia feel that Quatermass 2 does. It's still a good story, and I think it's one of the better Pertwee stories as a result.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Mary?
Actually, for this podcast, this is the third time I've seen Spearhead. First time was after getting Netflix streaming and seeing classic Doctor Who episodes on it. I was real excited to dive in there, and Spearhead was one of them.
Splash!
and I thought it would be, you know, a good introduction to Pertwee, and I really liked it then. Because like I said, it's an introduction to Pertwee. It was new. It was fresh. It has something for everybody in the family. You know, mom gets to watch, you know, the Brigadier and, Pertwee, both of which are very fit, very handsome, you know, men. The guys in the family have, Liz Shaw, and, the little boys and girls have, you know, all of the scary bits, which this has a lot of scary bits in it. So I can see why it would have helped bring back, you know, the franchise. We were laughing about the monster before, and it was an interesting scene. The monster itself with all of its tentacles is pretty rubbishy, but Pertwee kind of vacillates between those comic eyes, so you want to laugh, but then he's also struggling very well with it, which helps to pull off, you know, the real threat of it. So I think he sold that monster for me because of how well he was working with it. And I was amused at the idea that, you know, people would actually pay to see ranks of top civil servants in a matter of Toussaint's. Now, I've, like I said, this is the third time I've seen it, and more of the more I watch of the Pertwee era, actually, the more bored I get because it's so formulaic that I just don't like formula things, and I really don't like, you know, the James Bond, you know, over land and sea and air, every vehicle.
I think the James Bond side of things, it is something that was in Doctor Who for about 3 or 4 years. Because, like I say, looking at Enemy of the World, that's very James Bond.
Yeah.
In the field and in the studios and sets and stuff. It was very popular at the time.
This story, as an introduction to Pertwee, I think was very good. I enjoyed it then. I've enjoyed it the last two times I've seen it. So there.
Okay. I
used to find Third Doctor stories to be somewhat boring, and I've come to become quite fond of them.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't say all of stories
Master?
Are boring.
Master? Turn around and look at the small picture next to your front door and straighten it.
Kirby.
Be quiet.
Can I add something? Which I thought a bit funny when I was watching the episode. You know how all this Auton stuff is happening? You know, when they crash out the store windows, things like that. People are dying, and then, you know, they're we cut to the unit headquarters with the Brigadier and that, and they're talking about, you know, the radio's gone, like, it's all happening worldwide. And yet when General Scobie, when they go downstairs and the doctor zaps the Auton General Scobie, and the real General Scobie comes to life in the Waxworks Museum, I'm just thinking, this is early morning, so they've let all this Auton stuff is happening, yet they let visitors into the Waxworks Museum. Ah. You know what I mean?
Can I interject?
Yeah.
Of course.
Going back to the novels, and I mentioned this when we did Ambassadors of Death, and Adam cut it out perhaps a bit wisely because I couldn't figure out what I was trying to say at the time. One of the things that's fascinating is there's a book called Who Killed Kennedy that covers a lot of the early unit stuff, which talks about all this. And in fact, it's not all over the world, it's all over the country. And in the book, the cover story that's issued is that it's a series of IRA attacks and that people fled into Madame Tussauds to get off the streets because of all the stuff that was going on, and that there were these rumors going around that waxwork figures had come to life inside the museum. So it nicely ties together. But if you think about sort of London being under attack and whatnot, if you think about, and I hate to make this comparison, you look at something like, say, 9/11, where people did flee. They were going into places what probably would never have been open and they would never have gotten access to at that time of day anyways. So it's about plausible.
Yeah, but when you cut to that scene, it's like it's an everyday, oh, we're open for business kind of scene.
And the people don't look particularly excited or anything.
No, that's what I mean. It just doesn't seem to be congruent.
Yeah, maybe they needed a better sound effect and people sounding more panicked. That might have sold it a bit better.
Okay.
And anyway, I'm waiting on Robert and Barry to post their unit photos on the 20 megabyte Facebook page.
I don't have any.
Unit photos? What unit photos?
Well, what about
you posted the photo of you wearing the hat. Kirby posted the photo of his button, and I posted a photo of me wearing my unit shirt.
Excuse me, Matthew. It's a beret.
Beret, excuse me.
A beret is a variety of hat. No matter
remember
what
last
you
week,
look at.
the last few weeks, I have been mentioning to listeners, if you don't provide us with feedback, I will sing at the end of the show. This week, the message got across, fortunately, and we have some feedback. So just remember this. I've already recorded the song for next week if we don't get feedback for next week. So.
Oh, excellent. Oh.
It's already in the can.
What is it?
This week? Yeah. We haven't got a song this week because we've got no feedback.
Why not?
What's
the song for next week, though, if there's no feedback?
Well, I thought it was apt for all of us lot, a little help from my friends.
And you are going to do it.
Ditty. Well, I've done it. I've recorded it.
Oh,
it's ready.
Okay.
But it won't be on this week because we have enough feedback. And it won't be next week if we get enough feedback, for that matter. Right then. So I thought I had some feedback from Andy and Dawn, but he just sent me an email asking me if I was going to the 50th thingy, because he's going on the Friday, just conveniently to avoid seeing me, because I'm going on Saturday. Ironically, my cousin Karen, who recently had a baby, has decided to pick the 23rd of November to have the christening for the child on the Isle of Wight.
Speaking of that, I've been over on the Doctor Who podcast forum, and they were asking if anybody was going to be, who else was all going to be there, and I mentioned I would not be there because I'm on the wrong side of the Atlantic, but you would be going, and Michelle has said that they would be very interested in meeting you, Adam, when you're there on the Saturday.
Oh.
Well, it might be a good idea if they contact me, wouldn't it, really, because talking to you
would
not...
Well, you should be on those forums. Really...
Yeah.
I haven't got time to go on forums.
Yes, you have.
I wish I did. No, I haven't.
You've got time to do a podcast and watch Doctor Who.
I used to go on forums a while back, but they always ended up being quite argumentative, you know.
You have time to record a karaoke version of a Beatles song, but you do not have time to go on a small tour.
How dare you, karaoke version indeed. Anyway, we do have some feedback. The first bit of feedback is this, and hopefully it will play all right. It might be a bit quiet, so I'll turn it up. Hang on. Oh, it's on full blast. Here we go. Hope it works. I haven't listened to any of these. I never do. Well, I do when I listen to the show.
Hello to everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. This is Patrick from North Hollywood, California, and I am sending in my feedback for Spearhead from Space. But what a week for Doctor Who in general,
indeed.
Huh? good week.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Spearhead from Space. I first watched this story about a year and a half ago. I had never seen any John Pertwee stories. This was my first Pertwee story. I wanted to start it at the beginning. Now, normally, I'm not a big fan of stories based on Earth in general for any of the Doctors. Well,
General
but I really enjoyed this story. I enjoyed the Autons as the bad guys. The whole concept of the Nestine consciousness was really cool. I liked my first real introduction to UNIT and Liz Shaw. So I enjoyed it a lot. But mostly I want to concentrate on the Blu-ray version, which I know not everyone has, but it's like night and day compared to my old copy of Spearhead. It's so clear, and it just makes me it's unfortunate that not there isn't any other Doctor Who stories that survived or that have been shot on 35mm or 16mm film that actually have survived to being able to be transferred to scanned and transferred to Blu-ray. Because I'm telling you, if you don't own it, you get a chance to. Even if you have Spearhead from Space and you're on the fence, should I get what's the real difference between the Blu-ray version and the DVD? It's not that great. It's really, really is different. So I highly, highly, highly recommend it. So yeah, I enjoyed the story. You know, it's a classic Doctor Who story. It's John Pertwee's first, and it gets me psyched up to watch even more of his stories in the future. And that's pretty much it about Spearhead. Get the Blu-ray version if you don't have it. If you don't, if you just have the regular DVD, then you're still good. So anyway, that's my short, quick feedback for Spearhead. Great story. I like it. I like it a lot. I like Liz Shaw. Like John Pertwee, like the Autons, like the Brigadier, and now I'm gonna delve into these newly discovered episodes. That's gonna be my my fun time this weekend.
Mine too.
I get to watch those back to back, so that should be fun too. Yeah. So I hope you guys are having a good day and have a good week.
That was Patrick Bishop. Thank you, Patrick. There we go. That's what we do.
Thank you
send
Patrick,
feedback yeah. like that into 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, which is what Ian's done.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello.
After John Pertwee left Doctor Who, he starred in a children's TV series called Wurzel Gummidge. This was about a scarecrow. Wurzel had two spare heads, which gave him extra abilities when he put them on.
Spearhead from Space.
Spearhead from Space.
Yeah, what a surprise.
The video cameramen were on strike over more money for using colour cameras. The film cameramen were still working, so this story is shot entirely on film. Apart from the Eighth Doctor TV movie, this was the only one made on film. The first scene has a woman unit officer, and the next has the arrival of Liz Shaw. Liz gets some This Is a Woman music. BBC then, as now, was short of money. That was the idea of confining the Doctor on Earth. When the Autons are activated, they use a sound effect of breaking glass instead of breaking any real shop windows. There's also the sound of a police car and a car crash. The 8th and 11th Doctors also stole their clothes from hospitals.
Yep.
The Doctor and Liz Shaw investigate unexplained cases. He is sure aliens have taken over senior figures, and she's sceptical about the existence of aliens. Isn't that the plot of The X-Files? There's a meteor shower due on Monday the 21st, so keep an eye on the shop dummies. Bye for now.
Bye, Ian. Thank you very much. And, of course, when you said about meteor shower, when I was walking the dogs this morning, I did see a shooting star. So I don't know if he was referring to that or not.
Well, it's not the 21st.
Fair enough. But never mind. And also we have feedback from Thomas Reyes, who says, "Hello, everyone. I hope this message gets to you on time." It did. "I meant to send something in last week regarding the Pirate Planet, but I really wanted to hear Adam sing, so I didn't bother." No, he didn't say that. "But it has been a while since I've seen it. I remember enjoying it, but not enough to add much to the conversation. I think I remember Adam mentioning that it was his favourite story. I'd like to ask everyone what stories are their favourite. Well, we better pause there. Then go on in, Mary.
Wow, I'd have to think about that. I haven't seen the whole...
Yeah, all right, what's the favourite for what you've seen so far, then?
Can you come to me last? Ask the others.
Okay,
let me
Matthew.
Think about this.
Genesis of the Daleks from the old series and Human Nature, Family of Blood from the new series.
Kirby?
What was the question?
What's your favourite story?
Favourite stories, Kirby. Or favourite
story. Stories of what?
Doctor Who. This is a Doctor Who podcast.
I was doing some research. Sorry.
Okay.
Looking up locations again.
Favorite story: Genesis.
Okay.
The Daleks.
Robert.
I've always been partial to Robots of Death, but I love them, a lot of them. So it's very hard to sort of pick one. But Robots of Death.
For me. Well, you know, I've already said it's Pirate Planet, City of Death, stuff like that. But as far as story, it's very close to my heart. Yeah, it would be Castrovalva. It's not particularly good. It's because that was my first story as a proper Doctor Who fan. First story I watched live as it went out when I became a proper Doctor Who fan. So that's quite close to my heart. Yeah, sorry, you were saying, Kirby?
The Douglas Adams ones.
Mm-hmm.
And all three Douglas Adams.
Coming back to Mary.
I would have to say Kinda.
Oh. Excellent. Yeah.
It is so strange. Mm. It is so out there that I had to watch it. Had to watch it twice to really take it all in. So far, I'd say Kinda.
Okay,
I'm with you on that too, Mary.
Continuing Thomas's feedback, I suppose if anyone cared to ask me, it would be Seeds of Doom. Anyways, Spearhead from
Space. I like
Space,
Seeds of Doom too. Yeah.
Although I think it kind of drags in spots, I like this story, and it's one I'd like to add to my collection. I love the Autons. It's a shame they were never used as effectively as they were here. I wish I could elaborate more, but it's way past my bedtime. Thanks again, Thomas Reyes. Now, that was only just enough feedback to stop me from filming. Filming? Singing! but we did get some stuff on. There was something interesting came through on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which I counted as feedback. I've got to find it now.
So, I tend to agree with Patrick Bishop about the Pertwee era, you know, being stuck on Earth and all that. Just the Pertwee era is not my favorite.
Okay. Yeah, but Mary.
You haven't seen a lot of it, though, have you?
What was the name with the outer sky?
I don't know. Robert. I don't know, Josh. Sorry. Oh, sorry.
Julianne. Robert Haynes.
No, Robert. Dot Haynes.
Robot Haynes.
God.
Robots of Death Haynes.
Now, I haven't seen Terror of the Autons yet. I have it, but I haven't watched it yet.
Well, I'm just saying I'm Mary.
It's supposed to be good.
Never mind. Mary, I'm obviously...
A lack of money.
But I don't particularly like the first of Pertwee's series. So if I judged it by that one, I'd say I don't really like his era. But you haven't seen a lot of Pertwee, so maybe
you've
got to see all
of
them, that there'll be some things there that you'll quite like. I mean, Planet of Spiders is one that springs to mind. It's one of my favourite stories.
I have seen
that.
I don't care for Planet of the Spiders.
I love it.
Yeah,
anyway.
Have you seen Carnival of Monsters?
No,
yes, I haven't
seen that.
That's quite good,
Anyway. Philip W. Cerner sent a thing on the Facebook group, which was Natalia had her first full Doctor Who story just before turning 5 next month, Invisible Enemy. And yes, Kirby, the album title refers to the show title, not the Doctor. P.S. I did rather enjoy the terrible musical pun in the latest episode of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Which did get a couple of comments. Chuck Gears says... This was also my first Doctor Who story. And then Dr. Philip W. Cerner said, I did put on the updated effects as I have watched the original dozens of times before. So that sort of counts as feedback in my view. And thanks to everybody who did send in something this week. I've got a funny feeling they won't bother next week. So next week I'll probably be singing a little help from my friends.
That was a good catch on... I say Ian did a good thing with that. This is a woman music. It was so true when they played that on that, and nowhere else.
I'd love to be able to isolate that and just play it over your introduction every time we're on the show. I just this little your little theme tune.
Yes.
I like it. I know it's K9.
Yeah.
And I hope Patrick sends in feedback if he's going to be watching those new episodes, because aren't we talking about those next?
Yeah, next week and the week after,
I was about to say, Adam, if a whole lot of people, they've just been found, a whole lot of people might not have seen them yet to send in feedback.
I accept this, but we're going to have to talk about them, because... If everybody was rich enough, if all Doctor Who fans were rich enough, they all would have bought it there and then. Go on then, Robert.
That people would have listened to the audios, read the books.
Yeah, of course,
All these many years.
No, I did.
So they can comment. They can see the telly snaps. There's been all these years. Yeah, there's even the first episode of Web, people have seen that.
But it's not quite the same as having watched
them.
I mean, I personally have only watched the first two episodes of The Enemy of the World. I've just rewatching them because I forgot to write questions on them. So before I continue watching the story. And when I listened to the audio, and I should be saying this next week, but I must admit it was good, but I just find it not so good. But watching it now is a completely different thing. It's just, I find it spellbinding watching these.
It looks like it's going to be really good. I've got it, but I haven't watched it
yet. And it's also interesting to say that this is probably the first classic Doctor Who story that me and Mary have watched the same amount of times. Doctor Who News.
Yeah, I just bought it off
iTunes
last night.
Yeah, it's good. I'm so happy that iTunes and BBC
got it last night too.
Arrangement. Because, they're going to release it on DVD, slightly tied it up or whatever with the extras or whatever. Fantastic. Yeah. I'll buy them.
A lot of people have been complaining that it was put on iTunes exclusively, that it wasn't put on like Amazon streaming or anything. A lot of people are fussing about that.
I don't care.
Matthew.
I don't either, but, I don't understand why people are complaining. Well, it's like, be thankful they found these.
Exactly, and that they published them so quick.
I had more money on my Google Play account than my iTunes account.
Mm. Okay, never mind.
So I would have bought it first from Google Play.
The thing I found Robert, before we move on to news.
No, I was going to mention Amazon. We don't have an Amazon Australia, and a lot of the stuff we can't sort of buy on Amazon, or it's limited. So maybe it wouldn't be available here if they did put it on Amazon streaming. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I figured that the reason
iTunes is worldwide.
That was what I was about to say. Was I think the reason they picked iTunes was iTunes is a worldwide thing. I don't think it has to. I think it was the easiest way to distribute it digitally and get it out there in a hurry and avoid the situation that happened with Airlock and Underwater Menace Episode 2, where 2 years later, Episode 2 of Underwater Menace still is not available to purchase.
Mm. Isn't that not coming out on a DVD soon?
It's looking like it'll be sometime early, middle next year. They don't have a date nailed down yet because they're animating episodes 1 and 4, apparently.
I still say that they've got a bunch more of these things in reserve.
Can I mention something to do with that?
Yes.
Because apparently, from what I've heard, they have found episode 3 of Web of Fear. And apparently it was more damaged than the other ones, and it's going to need a lot more restoration, etc., repair work, which should make sense also that the DVD release of Web of Fear is next February rather than around the same time as the Enemy of Fear DVD release, is next month. And Enemy of Fear.
A new Doctor Who title coming up there.
Yeah, worldwide is going to have to wait. Is going to be waiting even longer on the DVD releases. I think I said on the Facebook group because the BBC played it very close to their chest. Yeah. And unlike with the regular DVDs, where they send it out with plenty of lead time for DVDs to be prepared for region one and region four in particular, this was not. They did not give any kind of heads up about it. So it's looking like it'll be spring next year at the earliest. Before the U.S. will finally get Enemy of the World, and I would imagine, and there's this very good possibility if we have a similar February release on Web of Fear, that Web of Fear will come out here first on DVD before Enemy of the World does, instead of vice versa, like it was in the UK.
Okay. Moving on to news. Yeah, it's quite... Yes.
No, just it's because it's the same theme, the same topic.
Oh, go on then.
I've also heard from somebody, they're saying Marco Polo, it would be due to be announced Marco. At this Polo at the BFI Scotland Marco. Event.
Yeah, Polo, that'd be good. I sort of saw a slightly reconstructed version of that. Yeah, I have a funny feeling that there will be more, because, you know, there was a talk of like 100 and odd episodes, so I knew it wouldn't be that as many as that, but for it to be 12 or 11 or 12 or as it seems a bit.
And?
Yes.
Well,
if you think about the two episodes that are released, one, they're consecutive, which does seem a bit funny that you just happen to find consecutive episodes, which I was just thinking, but also for the fact that. They seem to be quite complete. I just felt very
sure that Power of the Daleks was going to be one of them, you see.
Yes.
So I have
doubts about Power of the Daleks, because as we know from the big DWM article done last year about the way the stories were sold worldwide. Well, it wasn't talking about the fact that they didn't exist anymore. It was talking about how they were sold. And the fact that because Terry Nation was trying to – go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's like Feast of Stephen. They're saying, oh, that couldn't be because it wasn't released worldwide. Apparently, the BBC did a lot of testing with technicians actually filming doing their tele-recording process that a lot of copies existed this way – that weren't saleable copies. There was no paperwork kept. And apparently a lot of this stuff has been discovered as well. And they sort of have to explain, well, why do I have copies of this? It's like, you know, there shouldn't be copies of episode 3 and whatever of Dalek's Master Plan, but there are. So
I think
what I'm saying, they shouldn't really exist, but these things still appear. So there are other ways that these can be found, you know what I mean? Because they don't have to be from copies sold overseas.
Right, and also to keep in mind that the copies of Airlock and Underwater Menace 2 that turned up were prints originally sold to Australia that made their way back across the globe to a film collector in the UK. But so it might be entirely plausible, but the thing is 9 episodes were returned, and the big rumor for a long time was that that 90 episodes have been recovered. And I do wonder if the story gained a bit in translation somewhere, and somebody typing it up maybe on an internet forum accidentally added a zero to the end of the 9, and that was where suddenly 90 episodes turned up. Mm-hmm. Because the 106 episodes turning up that was reported by the media in the UK seems very much like it would have been a case of somebody at a news desk going, okay, missing Doctor Who episodes have turned up. Quick Google search. Well, apparently 106 are missing. Let's just put that out as the banner headline.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's hope that there is going to be more. I have a funny feeling there will be. I think also they need to go around a few other African television stations in their research. Anyway, can I do news now?
I think they have been, Adam.
Can I do news now? Now, what I thought
haven't we been doing this?
I
could add some more. No, it's just because... The person that I am in contact with has said also that he saw clips of Power of the Daleks that weren't on the DVD Lost in Time, as well as Marco Polo. So these are pretty reliable sources that I've heard from too.
Well, I hope you're right. Anyway, more news then, Kirby. More news. Well, I thought it was quite amusing that obviously these episodes came out on iTunes on Friday. And the next day that there was news articles coming through on Who News, Doctor Who episodes found. Just these bloody news reports are coming up 2 days after the episodes were actually released on iTunes. I thought it was just hilarious. What else we got here? Day of the Doctor broadcast time has been revealed. 7:45, which is good, because the Doctor Who celebration PM, the Doctor Who celebration finishes at about 5, so it gives me time to get from there to the Travelodge so we can watch it in the hotel. So I'm quite pleased about that.
And we get to watch it a lot earlier.
No, I don't think. Well, I haven't said it is. I wish they would, because obviously it's filmed in 3D. So I'd like to be able to pop to a cinema and watch them. So I'm hoping that our local cinema, which has 3D, will have it running for a week. So when I come back to the island, I can go and watch it in 3D in the cinema. But they haven't said that. It's not been confirmed one way or another. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. The man who invented the Daleks audio, but it's funny. It says Terry Nation, not Raymond Cusack. Don't quite know what's going on there.
Did you say audio, though?
Yeah, so it's written
it's
by...
It's the audio...
Alwyn
It's the
w.
audio
Turner.
Book of the Terry Nation biography, which is read. It's being by read David by David Trout. Mm.
That's been announced, as they say. So that'll be quite a good thing to get, I think. Stick on your iPod or audio playing device. I'm sure Audible will get that at some point, because they do tend to get some of the best stuff. Doctor Who magazine has launched a website, about time too. And it's www.doctorwhomagazine.com. Don't know why I'm giving them a plug. They wouldn't give us one. And
is that spelled out, or is that DR? It's D-O-C-T-O-R?
Yeah, it's spelled
out. Doctor Who Magazine.
Well, that's the only way of spelling Doctor Who.
Yeah, Adam, they would probably give us a shout-out if we bought an ad in there, but I hate to see what an ad in Doctor Who Magazine would cost.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, never mind.
Well, who won has an ad in there, don't
they? On Friday the 11th, nine episodes have been recovered. There we go. Enemy of the World, Web of Fear, DVD clarification.
Really?
Yeah. Amidst some... Well, hang on, that's your fault. I read the next line. Amidst some confusion over the DVD release of the recovered Enemy of the World and Web of Fear, BBC Worldwide confirmed that these will be single disc releases as described by online shopping sites, and not two discs as the covers released earlier today indicate. Nice artwork, though.
It's a bit like the goof that a bit like the goof that occurred with the Scream of the Shaka. Was supposed to be two discs, and it was eventually dropped to one, but the first batch of DVDs produced, at least here in the US, I don't know about the UK, all still have two discs listed on very prominently on the front cover and on the DVD spot.
Well, it's quite... it's just quite interesting where all these little things sort of come about. Silly little mistakes. But yeah, I do like
does that mean we look forward to the special edition later on in the year?
Well, it says limited edition. Obviously, it's not that limited, because they're bound to bring it out again and again and again and again.
Not only that, but the indications I'm reading from reading websites is the DVD releases will have no special features. There will be no, there won't be any commentaries or anything. And I think it's just them simply trying to get it out.
Get them out as quickly as possible. And then,
so
of course,
they're simply trying to get it out.
Cyberman.
But the BBC, because it's been quite popular downloading this lot, you know, they've made a hell of a lot of money on it.
I know.
It's very cold in here all of a sudden.
What about the other story that kind of surfaced over the weekend?
Web of Fear?
No.
No.
Shada.
Animated version. That was Ian Lee's thing, wasn't it?
Well, reading your comments, it doesn't sound like it's very well done.
But since it's the closest thing to the original story, as it was supposed to be, so I like it for that.
I haven't seen it. Maybe sometime in the future we can look at it, but not obviously we've got.
Well, there's so many for a lost story. There's so many different versions of Shada out there.
There's the 1992 VHS version of Shada. There's the 2003 animated webcast. There's the audio CD version of that. There's the Gareth Roberts novelization of it,
which I read.
And then there's the animation. There's five different versions of Shada out there.
And I have them all because I'm a Douglas Adams fan.
I have them all too, Kirby.
I just read the book.
the book is good, and actually the book is excellent, let's be honest. The problem I have with the book is, especially in what would have been TV episodes 5 and 6, Gareth Roberts starts really rewriting stuff quite heavily, and he starts taking some big liberties with it. There's an entire chapter towards the end that is completely brand new that Gareth Roberts just wrote, in kind of, I think maybe in an attempt to kind of fill all the plot holes he found, but it kind of, it defeats the whole point, I think, of presenting it if you're just going to go in and rewrite huge chunks of it because mm-hmm. you feel like it. And it's the only, that's the only reservation I have about him also doing City of Death as well.
Yeah, City of Death, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Right, yeah. Did you hear the postman, by the way?
What did you get? Your 10th planet, is it?
Yeah, we heard a cyber postman.
Yeah, well, have a look. Cyber postman. How? Open the pack up. I hurt my finger in the process. I got...
I hope that you straight...
10th planet.
I got my brand new scarf. Remember I said last week?
Lovely
lady, Lavazzi. Has sent me my replacement scarf.
Are you going to put it on right now and take a photo and post it to
right now? It's very long, although
straighten that picture before
it's
you.
It's very long.
About straightening pictures.
Did you have to return the other one?
No, I've still got that, so I might.
Oh, so you've
I
got
might
two.
Wash it and flog it. It's a bit tatty around the edge, but it looks it may look a little bit more like a Tom Baker tatty Tom Baker scarf. But this is. Fourth Doctor scarf, and I've wrapped it right around my neck about 15 times. Still going. There we go. Anyway, I suppose you better do the quiz, don't you think?
And take a picture, post it.
Oh, well, I did it on video.
Huh?
I hope that worked. no, it did.
Shut up, Magic.
I can't do that. I'll have to post that later. Right then, so...
How did you post the other one?
I did a photo. Yeah. I can do that quickly.
Because he was ignoring us at the same time as you.
I'll do a quick photo. But I've got the...
I was ignoring you guys.
I could stitch the two together, couldn't I? I could...
unit bar.
Be quiet, I'm talking. I could... Hang on, I'll just blot off the window. I've got a bit of backlighting going on. I'll blot off the window. There we go.
Spot on the window, eh?
Oh, the flash went off. Right, so...
What?
Savior of the universe.
Yeah. Now, what were you talking about? You put me right off my beaten
track. Gordon's alive!
Oh, there was a... Brian Blessed. Brian Blessed was on Piers Morgan's Life Stories last week. It was a fantastic episode. What an interesting man.
He didn't record for us.
I recorded it for me, thank you very much. Didn't talk about Doctor Who at all, I have to point out. So don't get
excited. Why not?
Because he was only in it for 5 seconds. But he was a really, very, very interesting man, Brian Blessed. Now, what were we talking about before you put
the character married Perry.
Quiz?
Yeah, we're going to do the quiz in a minute. Yeah, wanted me to upload this picture. Oh, yeah, no, that's what I was going to say. I'll wash the other one, and I could stitch them both together, and I'd have a... How much? How long are they? 14 feet? I could have a 28-foot one.
Oh, my goodness.
Wrap it around your entire head and body.
Be a mummy.
Having length issues, Adam?
Hey?
Yes.
What'd you say?
Don't go there.
Suntaran experiment.
Oh, I see. Right.
Remember when he grabbed this?
I'm going to put my replacement scarf, as people might think I haven't already got one.
Yeah, Matthew, in answer to your question about the Doctor Who Moonbase trailer... I'm wondering whether they actually have the whole episodes, maybe, and that's why they're not showing any animation. Wouldn't that be good?
That would be brilliant.
That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm
right
hoping.
Then. Okay. No, it's time to move on because Kirby's only got 22 minutes now. We have new members to the group.
Mary, I assume.
New
and
members
me
to
too,
the group.
Yes.
Be quiet. New members to the group. Right, we have, as far as my records tell, Dana Franklin, Samantha Garman.
Hello, Dana.
Ernest Rodriguez. He tried to join the Isle of Wight group, but Ernest, you know. Jeff Franklin and Joanne Sands. I did send Ernest a message when he tried to join the Isle of Wight Doctor Who fans, saying it's really a group for people living on the Isle of Wight. You should really join the 20 Megabyte podcast. But he'd already done so. What a twit. That's me, not him. Good Lord, I'll be careful what I say.
Yes.
right, I'm going to have to...
Yes.
Start insulting our members.
Yes.
That's what she said. Okay. So I better close down Safari because unfortunately I keep on getting notifications and they're coming out on the audio. Okay, I think it's time for this week's edition of... you won't get this one. Wow.
won't.
And we won't. We won't.
So we present the award to Matthew and move on.
Right then. Hang on. Get me paid.
Where's Matthew?
Hello.
Okay.
You were hoping then, weren't you?
Hello.
You were hoping that he'd disappeared into the cyber.
I used to back before Matthew.
Right.
I can go away.
No.
The first question, get me pen ready. The first question goes to Mary.
All right.
What colour ties do unit workers wear?
Oh, my Lord. Dark green.
Green is near enough. It's not okay. It's not a Pantone reference quiz. It's just the colour. Anyway, this is for Matthew.
Yes.
Where did the meteors come down? As mentioned in the script.
I know.
Oxley Woods.
No.
Sector 5 Epping.
Well done, Robert. Kirby. Oh.
Master.
How does Liz envisage aliens?
Little green men, I guess. I don't remember.
Go on, Robert.
I know.
Robert.
Little blue men. I can't remember the rest.
I'll give you a point for that. It's little blue men with, what is it, Matthew?
Three eyes.
No, three heads. Bad luck. Right.
Three heads.
Yes. Robert.
I did write it down somewhere. Yes, sir.
Three something.
Where is the Institute of Space Studies?
I know.
Institute of Space Studies. Let me have a look.
We mean to have a look.
No, in my notes.
Oh, go on then, go on then.
Institute of Space Studies. Is that where, what's the name worked?
Just answer the question.
Oh, because she just said Cambridge, didn't she?
No. Go on then, Matthew.
I don't know.
Matthew.
Baltimore.
Correct. Right, Mary.
Yes.
Who calls Dr. Henderson and moans about the blood sample not being human?
Is it Lomax?
Correct.
Dr. Lomax? Okay.
Ooh. Well done,
which
Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
Who speaks for the trees?
I wrote a lot of names down.
Right.
Well, that may be a Quatermass reference because Inspector Lomax is a very prominent supporting character in Quatermass.
Shut up, blooming Quatermass.
So he speaks for the trees, I assume.
Right. Matthew.
No one got that.
What is the name of the character that phones the newspaper?
Mullins.
Correct.
Who phones the Daily Chronicle.
I know it's...
Kirby.
Master.
Where does the doctor get treated?
In a hospital.
I know.
Well,
Mary said I know first. Any specific hospital, Kirby?
I don't remember.
Okay, Mary.
There's a big sign. I saw there
was a
sign.
Wasn't it called the Cottage Hospital?
It was indeed called the Cottage Hospital.
I know.
Hospital.
It's what? Ashbridge Cottage Hospital.
That's fine. I think Mary did enough to get a point. Thank you very much. Who's next? Robert.
Do I get a point there for mentioning it's
don't.
Ashbridge then?
Robert.
If you have a look on the sign on the front of the hospital, it says Ashbridge Cottage Hospital.
Okay, well, I think...
Oh, that deserves
on,
a point.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Need to shut you up. What's the third doctor's first word?
I know.
Choose.
Correct.
No.
Right, after those rounds of questioning innings,
zero.
In last place with no points deliberately, Kirby. In third place with 3 points, Matthew. And in the lead with 5 points each, Mary and Robert. Right.
I think that I'll work on getting no points for the first time ever.
Okay, Mary.
Yes.
What does Dr. Henderson ask the nurse to fetch after the doctor grabs his shoes?
I know.
Oh, I don't know. Give it to Robert.
No, no, Robert.
He says, fetch the sphig, meaning the sphig man and optimism and blood pressure machine.
Yes. Correct.
Well done.
That's right.
Matthew.
Yes.
What was Private Hawkins assigned to do?
Guard the TARDIS?
Nope. Anybody?
No, is that the guy who has to guard the doctor?
No, the answer is to take the meteorite fragment to the Brigadier's car. Kirby.
Whoa.
Master.
What music?
I don't know.
What music was played to the staff in the plastic factory over the radio?
I don't know.
Music?
I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
it's Fleetwood Mac that's playing, but it's not in all the versions because of the same reason why the Beatles clip from The Chase is cut out of the North American DVD was because the music necessarily isn't clearable all over the world. Now, it's in the most recent editions of the story, but in some of the older editions, it's not there.
Okay, so what,
maybe it's, what it may song? Not be
so,
in my
yeah,
first
so
DVD.
It may not have been the one we heard.
Never mind. What song was it?
I'll
give you a point. Oh Well.
You should get 10
points. Oh Well by Fleetwood Mac was the thing.
By the way, that's an example of one of those questions where how would I have necessarily noticed that it was Fleetwood Mac or...
Never mind. Robert.
Me too.
What is the name of the factory manager that John Ransom visits? His full name, not just his surname.
That's Hibbert. George Hibbert.
Correct. Right. Mary.
Yes.
Liz deals with facts, not what? I deal with facts, not...
Oh, I remember her saying that.
I know.
I don't know.
Go on then, Matthew.
I deal with facts, not science fiction ideas.
Yes. Right.
Matthew.
Yes.
What was the name of Sam Seeley's wife?
I know.
Oh, I know.
What was her name?
Something he doesn't know.
What?
Yes.
I don't know. Well,
then, Robert.
I think I know.
Okay. Robert said
Meg.
I know first. Meg is correct.
Meg.
Kirby.
Ah.
Master?
What did
What
did the plaque on the door read where the doctor went to have a shower?
I know.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Locker room. I don't know.
Go on, Kirby. Robert. That's all of you I've mentioned before the right one.
Matthew.
Doctors only.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
Yes. Robert.
Yes, sir.
Whose car did the doctor steal?
That's that Lomax, Dr. Lomax.
No, anybody? No?
He's a doctor, but don't know his name.
Oh, Dr. Beavis.
Correct. Right, so after those rounds of questioning, in last place with no points is Kirby. In third place with 5 points, Mary. In second place with 7 points, surprise, surprise, coming up fast on the straight, is Matthew. And in the lead with 9 points, Robert.
Whoa,
Mary.
How'd that happen?
Mary.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
What planet do they communicate with their eyebrows?
Delphine.
Correct.
She got it.
Matthew.
Yes.
What color tie does Ransom wear?
Jeez.
I know, I think.
Is it red?
It is.
That's what I thought too.
Kirby.
Master.
Where is the model of General Scobie being sent?
Madame Tussauds.
Correct.
Oh my goodness, I have a point.
Yay. I thought you were trying to lose, Kirby.
Robert.
Haven't lost me yet.
Robert, when the doctor complains about the primitive equipment he has to work with, Liz mentions what three bits of equipment in her defense. You get a point for each. There's a bonus points available here.
I did write it down. Where did I put it? Lasers, spectrographs, and microprobes.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Right. And after that round of questioning, in last place with 2 points is Kirby. In third place with 7 points is Mary. In second place with 9 points is Matthew. And in the lead with 12, Robert.
Wow.
This question goes to Mary.
Oh, wow. Robert. Okay. We have a Robert win.
Mary, right. Where does Liz find the key to the TARDIS?
I know.
Well, on Lethbridge Stewart's desk.
Correct.
Yes!
Matthew.
Yes.
Why does the TARDIS not open for the Brigadier? This is how as it's mentioned in the script.
It only opens for the Doctor. Only opens for Time Lords.
Yes, but it's
I know. I know what you're looking. I know what you're looking for.
I know too.
I know.
Are you giving up, Matthew?
I don't know the exact.
Go on, then, Kirby.
Metabolism detector.
Correct.
It's
obviously changed. Bit changed later on, didn't it? Matthew.
Yes.
You should see the Wikipedia article about the TARDIS lock, because there's so many differences.
Right, sorry, this is Kirby's question.
Master?
What is the name of the Seeley's dog? Rather badly enacted by a voice actor.
Oh, darn.
I know.
I knew it a few minutes ago. I don't remember.
Go on in, Robert.
Barney.
Correct.
Oh!
Oh, we mentioned it earlier.
Robert.
Yeah. Yes. Hey. Does anyone notice a connection there? Perhaps that's why the guy who owned the dog in the 11th hour was named Barney.
Ooh.
Ah.
Very good.
Maybe you're right.
Okay, Robert.
Yes, sir.
What setting blows up the... What?
Huh?
Oh, sorry, yeah. I do understand. I have written it down correctly for a change. What setting blows up the Doctor's equipment testing the swarm leader? It's a setting that Liz sets the machine to.
I don't know. I didn't
the Doctor says, set the machine to...
Stun. No.
Anybody? Anybody?
Nope.
Hey! Mary, come on.
I've actually managed to 51-1. 50 megacycles was the answer. I get one to myself there. Okay, after that round of questions, in last place with 3 points is Kirby. In joint second place with 9 points is Mary and Matthew. And in the lead with 13 points is Robert.
Robert!
Mary.
Yes.
What is the only staff the Brigadier can raise to battle the shop dummy Autons?
I know.
I don't know.
Robert.
It's his headquarters staff.
Correct. Matthew.
Yes.
What previous Doctor Who story used the term total destruction?
Ooh.
Oh, the Dominator.
That's a bit hard.
Correct.
And
Kirby. That's a bit hard if you had to watch the Dominators.
Faster.
What does ECT stand for?
Oh, that's easy.
Electroconvulsive therapy.
Yes, correct.
And I saw somebody having electroconvulsive therapy at the psych hospital I worked at.
Robert.
Must have been scary.
Yes.
What does doctor want instead of a salary to work for the Brigadier? That's obviously a point from each of the...
Oh, what did I write down? Money, my dear chap. I don't want money. I've got no use for the stuff. I want facilities to repair the TARDIS, laboratory, equipment, help from Miss Shaw here.
You get 2 points for that. Anybody like to pick up on the other one?
Clothes?
A car?
No.
In the hospital?
Yeah. Car.
Yeah.
Well, you'd already mentioned it. Then I'm not going to give you that because you did pass it on and then you came up with a clothes thing, Robert, but I'd already said...
I hadn't finished because I was turning my bit of paper.
Oh, for God's sake. No, I'll give you two. It's all right. Right, after that round of questioning, and this is the last full round of questioning, in last place with 5 points is Kirby. In third place with 9 points is Mary. In second place with 11 points is Matthew. And then the lead with... 16 points, Robert. Right, last two questions are a free-for-all. So, right, remember, I know it's your prompt to attract my attention.
How about Master?
What actor played Hibbert?
Master?
Go on then, Robert.
That was... Did you like that, did you? That was John Woodnut.
Correct.
Who also played...
And the last question...
Duke of Forgill in...
The last question, and this is it doesn't really matter because the winner has been, it's just to find out who can finish in third place, really, or second.
Stop shaking your
last ears. Question, who directed Spearhead from Space?
I know.
Robert.
Derek Martinez.
Correct. And the final scores this week, this is quite astounding, really. In last place with 5 points is Kirby, in third place with 9 points is Mary. In second place, oh my God, I can't believe this, is Matthew with 11. And the winner this week with 20 points, Robert.
Woo!
Robert.
That's why was when I took 6 pages of notes.
Wow.
And bad luck, Reese, who chickened out this week. Yeah, I've got to. That's the first time we've mentioned Reese this week. That's strange. Don't we mention him at the beginning of the episode?
You mentioned him a few times in this episode.
Right, what do you think, Reese? Well, that sort of more or less concludes this week's episode of the show. Next week, we'll be looking at The Enemy of the World. Is that all right with everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
That's fine, yeah.
Good. That's good then. And how about
and
the week afterwards?
And what day will we be recording?
I don't know. I thought you said we had to do it on Monday for a couple of weeks.
It's been several weeks.
Yeah, we've done Mondays for a few weeks, so maybe this time Sunday?
Let me look at my calendar.
This is promising for a Sunday, although it gives me a little bit less time to watch. Although I have watched two episodes already, so I might be okay.
Same here.
I'm doing a bridal show on Sunday, but should be okay. I've got
Adam,
Sunday off. Yes.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Did you like Troughton's mention about disused yetis instead of jetties when they mentioned about?
What episode is that in? Number one.
That was in episode two, I think. It was in episode two.
I've seen episode one twice.
Same here.
Okay. But yes, it was
same
good.
Here.
So yeah, that's I'm just going to check on Facebook just to make sure. Nothing else, no. But remember, what do you think of my picture, by the way? My new brand new scarf that I posted on the Facebook group. Nice, isn't it?
What do you think of my comment?
I haven't seen it yet because it's not loading.
I said the picture by the door is still crooked.
No, shut up.
And Adam,
it is very crooked.
Oh, be quiet. My mother-in-law's dog.
Oh, what about this business about the Stephen Moffat says that Dr. can only have 12 regenerations.
Yes, well, the Moffat lies.
Oh, don't listen to that man. Don't listen to
Moffat
him.
Moffat lies. And if the tenant mid's incarnation was in fact a regeneration, I've always said it was. And John Hurt is an incarnation of the Doctor. Therefore, the Doctor has already regenerated 13 times.
Right. And also, I think that...
River gave him her regeneration.
Mm. Exactly. That's what I was about to say.
Exactly, yeah. So what he says is also all a load of tosh. Right. But what I wouldn't be surprised he did is reset the whole history of Doctor Who, rather like they've done in Star Trek, so that... The Capaldi Doctor is in fact the first Doctor reincarnated and has to live his life in a completely different way, etc., etc. I wouldn't be surprised if Moffat did that. He wouldn't make a lot of people very happy.
Something completely different.
Yeah, I doubt that for two reasons. One is that we know Jenna Louise Coleman is carrying over, so it seems very odd if he was going to hit the reboot button, she was going to be doing that. Also, the news item I posted on the Facebook group this morning that Neve McIntosh, I think it is, has confirmed that Jenny Strax and Madame Vastra will all be coming back in Series 8. So it seems weird that they would be hitting that big of a reset button and bringing all that back anyways and keeping Jenna Louise Coleman on.
Yeah, but what I was saying was I wouldn't put it past him to do that. I didn't say it's going to happen.
Yeah. And also the fact, as I've pointed out before, that in the novels they kind of already did that with a couple of characters who went back and became the Doctor and Susan in that particular version of the timeline. So, but it wouldn't be the first time they've used something from the books in the show.
Indeed.
Well, and I mean, it's also possible that Jenna Coleman and the Madame Vastra characters might only be there for maybe two episodes or so, and then they might be gone.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to reiterate my threat if people don't send in feedback, because like I said, I have recorded it. So if I just to prove it, I'm going to play a quick burst. I'm not singing. Okay. I'm just playing a quick burst of it to prove that I've recorded it. Oh, hey.
Ooh, echo.
It's feedback. Here we go. Here we go. Have a listen.
Do you need anybody? I just need someone to love.
That proves that I, in fact, as I said, recorded that song. And if I don't... Oh, God, hang on.
Please, listeners, please, we beg of you, please. Please.
Can I just
I don't know, that sounded rather nice. I liked it.
Can
Mary,
I just say that I wonder
with your
what
ears.
First time...
Yeah, go on, sorry.
Can I just say I wonder what first-time listeners to the podcast who come to this and hear this are going to be making of it.
Well, us, me trying to threaten listeners, yeah. But I need feedback. We need feedback to stop that sort of thing happening on the show. Nothing
and
else has worked, Matthew.
You just sort of try to do it anyway. But...
Well, I'm prepared so for not getting feedback, but if I do get it, I won't sing. I think that's fair enough. I've tried all sorts of ways of bullying listeners into sending in feedback to this show. This is the only thing that seems to actually work. Anyway.
And Adam, have you received any shirts yet? Or What's going on with that?
Oh, I got a notification that they have been shipped. So, and I've only got my ones. I haven't, because obviously I can't send anything until I receive payment to you know, for certain things. So, we'll sort that out later. But I'll take a picture of them and bung them on the Facebook group when they do indeed arrive. But my mugs and my shirt, T-shirt, are on their way.
All right.
Okay. And remember, listeners, merchandise is available via the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group. But unfortunately, because they've pinned the show schedule to the top of the page, we can't pin anything else. So you have to scroll down to see the merchandise listed.
But you will pin it later on, won't you?
Maybe.
Well, all you've got to do is comment and it will bump it to the top of the page anyways.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, we'll comment then. Merchandise available. Anyway, so next week.
We've got to go.
Yeah. Next week, it's Enemy of the World. I can't wait. I can. And I will.
And will the week after that be Web of Fear?
It will. I can't wait still further. How exciting.
Yay.
Oh, dear. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Come on. So long, and thanks for all the fish. There we go.
Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.